And good morning, Andy's taking the day off today. Nice day to do that very thing. So
I don't know if he's golfing or not, but I think he should be. I think you and I should be golfing, Danny.
Let's go now.
That would be fun.
Barry Strands is back with us, and if you're familiar with Barry, if you're a listener of the show, you know Barry knows his stuff. We put him to work every so often here filling in for Andy Lindis, and today is no exception. So if you have any kind of a home improvement question, by all means, this is when you want to call in or send a text in. And by the way, those numbers are the same. Text number, phone number, identical. 651-989-9226. How have you been? I haven't seen you for a while.
Well, I'm in the throes of wedding preparation world.
Who's getting married?
My daughter Anna is getting married next Saturday, 1 week from today, up in the Two Harbors area on the North Shore.
So, what kind of preparation do you have?
Well, you know, the reality for me is I'm a dad who has construction skills. So
you're called upon.
Last night we were discussing whether or not over the head table there should be a trellis with dangling lights. And so at the reception, that you know, I'm looking at creating this kind of balance, 16 feet long, supported off a couple of columns so that they can drop these really cool light fixtures down and kind of dance over their heads as they sit down for their wedding meal.
It sounds like a big theatrical production.
Well, you know, it's all about making sure that the photos are perfect.
Oh, so, of course.
And it's going to be awesome, but it's now I'm putting my thinker to that. So when I go home today, I'm working on wedding stuff. So I've been building palletized wood, old salvaged pallet wood, little lift platforms for the grazing table. And this will be platters of veggies and meats and that kind of thing, kind of elevated above this, I don't know, vanilla damask table space. And then we'll lift up with these old wood pieces that I'm creating. And it's just ambiance, you know, it's about making it look really cool.
Listen to you.
I'm telling you, I've got 8 daughters, Danny. And when you got 8 of them, you go through the process and you start to learn stuff and go, oh, no, the head table needs a skirt. There has to be a skirt at the table and stuff like that, that I don't think most construction guys pay that much attention to. But you got 8 of girls, you're going to have to pay much attention.
Will you be singing at the wedding?
Well, I make a joyful noise. That's about as far as it goes. I was teased at singing Barry's Tone. That was what I had. I'm not planning to do any singing.
No singing.
I love you somehow. I don't think I have to even do a father-daughter dance yet. If I have, no one's given me that instruction. So we'll see.
You'll be busy.
Hey, the reception's a week after the wedding. So this is technically an elopement.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. So it's a lot of fun.
I was going to say, it sounds like fun.
I got another one that coming up in October. So, you know, 2 weddings in the same 3-month period of time.
To build something else then? Or?
I don't know. Well, we're beginning to have those conversations. Dad, if you're making this for Anna, what are you going to make for me?
You got to keep it even.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Well, that's great.
I'm very happy.
Well, much happiness to all those
couples. Yeah.
Barry, for those that are new to the show, thanks for checking us out. Barry, give us a little bio, if you would, on you've been in the construction business a few years.
A little while now. Started when I was 15, making $1.75 an hour, schlepping lumber on the job site with my grandpa. And went and did college, a speech comm major in school, and then came back to the construction business. Been in it ever since. Moved from basically doing framing carpentry to finished carpentry, then started my own remodeling company. And I've done remodeling and then began teaching construction to realtors and appraisers and then to contractors. When contractors had to get licensed, I began to teach classes. There's a lot of guys who know construction topics really well. But there aren't that many guys who can actually speak about it in a way that makes some sense. And I like to think I can, but, you know, the audiences, they're the ones who decide.
They're
me,
the judges.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but I have a blast doing it. So I teach for professional education resources, proedresource.com. And then my real day-to-day job is I'm a site supervisor for a company called Kyle Hunt & Partners. And we build and remodel primarily in the Lakes of the Isles area, Minnetonka. I'm sorry, Lake of Minnetonka area, doing a project in Lake of the Isles.
Mm-hmm.
And in the areas where people have some means and higher end stuff typically.
Sure.
But lots of fun and always a learning experience. So I'm finding myself looking at things that you think you understand. So I'm now going to be writing a spec on how to build a sauna. based on what we're doing on a job right now. We just got some great information that we should have had on the plan 6 months ago, but we're now putting it all together and having some fun making an airspace behind the cedar boards and then making sure there's a foil face back there for a vapor moisture retarder and drainage capacity and a drain in the floor and all the details that I don't know that you think about when you think sauna. You think about buying a kit from an online resource to get in your basement, insulating the walls around it and calling it good. But this is in an addition, and it's part of the exterior wall of the house. So it's a little bit more complex when you're starting to look at the thermal and moisture control issues that are part of an exterior wall assembly, whether your sauna is on an outside wall. So it butts against an exterior wall and against a garage wall and against a steam shower. And then we have a door access point into a hallway. And that means that you're looking at all of the moisture control issues all of those spaces. And do you put up plastic as you might think you should? And where is the dew point calculation going to land? And what happens if you have a steam shower on the other side? And how do you control water migration in those spaces? So all of those things require that you go into a deep dive about the information that we tend to think of as specific to a profession. But, you know, guys who build showers don't think about having a sauna on the other side.
That's true.
And
generally,
if you don't hire a sauna company specifically, but you put a trim carpenter in there putting in the lumber, they don't think about vapor control issues. They think about, hey, where is my joint supposed to go? And can I miter this? Do I need trim in the corners, or do I have to cope every piece and make sure it fits perfectly? So those are, they have a different set of information. So I'm the one responsible to get all of that detail done in a way that when we're all done, the high expectation homeowner goes, yes, you met my expectations. And we cross our fingers and hope we exceed them.
I would imagine that when you go into a house, not somebody, you're invited to dinner. You're not going to be examining their home. I said, maybe you do.
My wife would tell you that if we're going in, you're being quiet. Because I see everything. I shouldn't, but I do.
I've never asked you that before. You see some imperfections in woodworking especially.
Oh, my goodness, Denny. I was
trim.
We go to the spring preview and fall parade homes
on
a regular basis. I love doing
it. Me too.
And Pam would say, if you're going to talk out loud, you're going to not walk with me.
Yeah.
And the problem would be I would go in and I would know people who were selling for that builder because I'd have them in real estate classes.
Oh, I see.
I came into one house and the agent was there and he goes, Barry, hi, good to see you. Please don't say anything. That was the first words out of his mouth. And
he knew you.
Yeah, you're going to see stuff and I know it's there too, but please don't say it out loud.
Even in, quote, higher end homes, not for Kyle Hunt, but some of those, like in the preview, like some of the show, the houses you've seen. What are some of the, quote, errors that maybe some woodworkers?
Well, it's interesting to me because fit and finish is something we pride ourselves in as a company. And you have to keep in mind that the labor force only has as much time to produce outcomes on a job site as they're given money to allow. So you can have a guy who's a great technician, but if you force his clock and you speed him up, his work will be 92%, not 98%. He just does it. He needs the time to get it really dialed in. And if you can't provide the time or the money for the time, you're going to have a less valuable quality of product in terms of fit and finish. The battlefield is this. There are some technicians out there who just don't have the skill set yet. They're not good enough. They might be learning. They might be young. They haven't developed the craft that an experienced professional has. So you're fighting for an experienced professional who's fast. Now, those folks, almost every company that's a top-end company has people like that, but they're in high demand. So we go to our painters and say, you know what? Your company's got 100 painters. We want one of these three on our job leading the project. If you can't provide that, we don't want you guys to bid it.
Mm-hmm.
Because within that 100 group of painters, there's only a few who can do the quality at pace that we require. And that's always the challenge. And if you talk to any builder out there, he'll tell you that the quality of that company's work are the vendors or let's call them the subcontractors that they employ, that they use. And so some people pride themselves in having only one set of subs that they use on every job. We're too big for that. We have to have multiple plumbers, multiple electricians, multiple painters, et cetera. But within each company that we're trying to address, we're trying to find their top people to be able to deliver the work that we want. I see drywall and paint as the most egregious because they're the quickest things to see.
Mm-hmm.
But trim, carpentry, joinery, enamel versus stain. And then I look for things. My eye sees level. I cannot explain how well it can see it. It's weird that it can. Years ago, I walked into a job and an old guy was putting a mantle on a fireplace. I'm in my mid-20s. And I walked in and I said, you're a 16th low on the left. and he just started muttering words you shouldn't speak on radio, you know, like blankety blank I am. I said, well, you know, you got a stabilo level, check it. And the next thing you know, he's tapping his side up to raise it and putting a shim underneath it because it was off
a 16th
of an inch, and I could see it.
How about that?
Well, I'm not saying that's – it's like – it's an affliction, you know. It's not like it's a gift. It's like, oh my, it's a curse too.
But where do we get these young folks interested and trained correctly?
Well, the only process that in training in my mind is to do it. And then to do it until you get better at it, and then to realize that you've made a mistake, and then to accept responsibility for the mistake, and then to do it right the next time. But in some cases, I did a video. In fact, you don't know this, but I have a video on YouTube right now.
You do?
My name's not attached to it. I filmed for the Handyman Club of America years ago, back in 2000. And I did, 10 videos for them. There's a video out there that's called Building Understair Storage Spaces. And it has 3.8 million hits.
Wow.
And my name's not attached to it in any place. Nobody knows it's me. And I'm actually building this. And I was looking at the comments. I saw it again, I don't know, probably 3 weeks ago. And I was looking at some of the comments. And it's like, it's all over the world, a little video clip
Isn't
like that.
Something?
And I'm thinking, you know what? If I ever get a chance to retire, I'm going to make YouTube videos and explain how things should be done based on the mistakes I've made. Because
you
I don't think
do
you
that.
Really get educated until you've made a really fair number of mistakes and go, you know what? I thought that would work, but I was wrong. Here's how it has to be this way.
That's really good from that angle.
Well, the issue is to be able to monetize it so that I can keep my family, so I can pay for weddings, Denny.
Well, plus we want you here.
I'd so love there, being
we're,
here.
We're being selfish.
This is a pleasure being around you, sir.
We have to take a break. Callers, stay on the line. Texters, we're going to grab your questions, too. If you have any kind of a home improvement question, this is the guy you want to chat with, or at least send a text, 651-989-9226. Same number for calls and for text. I do see one line open. So you can fill it if you like. 651-989-9226. And good morning. Welcome back to our Home Improvement Show, brought to us by Linda's Construction. Andy's taking the day off today. Our friend Barry Strands is in studio helping you out by phone and by text. So if you do have any kind of a home improvement question, call it in or text it. And as I said, it is the same number, 651-989-9226. Let's go to the phones. Barry, Jerry in St. Paul's calling in this morning. Jerry, what's your question?
Barry, I have a question for you about my basement. It was poured in 1940. It's just a cement floor, and I've got some hairline cracks that are probably no wider than a playing card, and heavy rains, water will ooze up through those cracks. So I'm just wondering if you got any suggestions on how I can repair those cracks.
Okay, thanks, Jerry. A couple of things to think about. Number one, whenever you have cracks from shrinkage, which is what you're experiencing, you get these hairline small cracks, that's normal. The challenge, obviously, is when you've got high water table, which is what you're experiencing, you're getting hydraulic pressure pushing water up through that crack in the basement. The difficulty is to get something in that space that actually can handle the water pressure underneath. If it's not significant, there are sealants like a polyurethane, a Vulcan would be a brand, that could be going into that space. The challenge is whether or not you want to go as far as putting an epoxy sealant in that space. And then you'd probably want to what's called chase the crack, which means you take a grinder and you grind the crack out and actually get an epoxy, typically a two-part mixed, down inside that crack. That will have more permanence than merely caulking on the surface. If the pressure is substantial, it'll tend to pull the caulk over time and you'll be back doing it again. So the idea is what's the most effective. But concrete sealant epoxies, and most of the painting companies or caulking companies make that. There's a number of good videos from the concrete companies as well about repairing cracks in concrete, and you can see those on YouTube. And they'll give you the specific type of adhesion glue base that you want. There's acrylic caulks, and then there are other – epoxies, and there are other types of epoxy. And I remember watching a video in class that we had used to teach our contractors. And I'm trying to think of the link, but I don't know if it was Sherwin Williams or somebody like that. But really good source and would be a good choice for you there. Or you can call somebody like Jesse Trebill, the basement people. And they can give you a better idea of what specific material would go into that crack to address water. They'll answer that question for you just over the telephone.
Yeah, safebasements.com. Yeah.
That's good. Thanks,
Jesse. Danny. Sure. Texter says this. By the way, here's a number, 651-989-9226. I am going to be, you had mentioned the word sauna earlier. I'm going to be building a freestanding sauna. Can you send me any helpful info I should have?
Well, there's a number of good sources on the internet, and I don't carry the information with me, nor do I have time to get involved in helping people like that. I just don't have time. But if you go on to the interweb and just Google sauna kit installation, Helo's got a great video doc that's helpful regarding how they build their systems. A kit that you purchase or assemble, they'll have installation instructions. But the key is to remember you got to get a heater. Typically, it's electric. And then you're going to want to be able to provide ventilation into that space so that that air is coming in and air is exhausting. You keep air circulating in that space. Without having the specific details, you make sure you insulate very well. But type of insulation is all determined by your interior finished surfaces and where that space is going to be located relative to an exterior or a foundation wall. Yep. It gets a little more complicated than to try to answer like six different scenarios. But
I've been reading about, it seems lately, I don't know, they're really coming into favor again, saunas. It seems like it.
Well, I think that from a health standpoint, all the things that that's doing for our body physically, I mean, there are people who just grew up in a culture where that was normal. Some of the northern Finns, like
the Finns,
first thing you build is a sauna, and then you find a place to sleep, right? So it's like that to them, so that experience and that culture, it's like this is critical from a health maintenance standpoint. And I don't have one yet, but I take sometimes showers that almost feel like it.
As soon as the weddings are done.
Exactly. Right.
If they ever are done.
Oh, yeah, right.
You're back at it. I tell you, hang on. We're going to take a quick break. Barry Strands is filling in for Andy today. We have another half hour of the show to go. So hang on if you're on the phone line. There's a line open if you want to fill it, 651-989-9226. Exactly the same number if you want to send a text, if that form is easier. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to our Home Improvement Show presented by Linda's Construction, L-I-N-D-U-S. You want to get in touch with those good folks? 1-800-LEAF-GUARD, the easiest number to remember. Andy, as I said, taking the day off today. Barry Strands is filling in for Andy like he likes to do, and we like him here too from time to time, and you do too. So if you have any kind of a home improvement question, call Barry or text him. Same number, 651-989-9226. You always come in and bring a whole bunch of good things. We're going to get to those. But let's help some more folks out.
Let's do that.
Mm-hmm. Best way, here's an easy, well, I should say easy, because you've got to answer.
How do you know if it's easy or not? Maybe it's a real problem
it's a
for
simple,
me.
It's a simple question, but maybe difficult to answer. Best way to soundproof a basement?
Well, okay, I have a friend who's a drummer, and he's living in that kind of world where, you know, how do I soundproof this thing? So let's assume for the time being that we have concrete block or poured exterior walls. Generally, we don't need to worry about those because that masonry product is enough of a soundproofing to try to – it'll minimize vibration, which is what sound is transferring through. So framing becomes the challenge. So typically when we soundproof something, there's actually a website that addresses sound transmission ratings for various assemblies. And you can do research on this and you can find various assemblies. But what we normally default to is an R13 fiberglass bat inside a framed stud wall. And then we would run a half-inch soundboard product on the wall surface, and then we would drywall. That's typical. Now, there are some people who are advocates of what's called sound channel, which is a metal strip that runs perpendicular to the joists or to the stud wall. It may be a ceiling or it may be a wall assembly. And that minimizes the contact point, minimizing the vibration. But what some people forget to understand is if they don't seal at the points of penetration, like a recessed can light, a light fixture, an exterior wall socket, an HVAC ductwork assembly, then all of the other work they're doing is going to have a sound bypass coming through the point of penetration. Those you need to eliminate in every possible case, those penetrations to maintain sound integrity. And that's the biggest problem. So whenever someone's looking at ductwork that's required to be inside a space, thickening the wall so that you can insulate for sound on the face of that ducting is always valuable. And if you can get both sides of that duct insulated, even better yet. So you can put a 2.25-inch boot on a wall stack system and put 1.5 inches of fiberglass on both sides of that in a 5.5-inch wall. And that will be an ideal way to isolate that duct assembly from sound transmission. We're doing a room right now that is going to have lots of noise from birds. And our technique was you can spray foam the ceiling. We did a portion of it that way. And then we blew sound batting all the way into the ceiling. And, you know, I think our joist space was 14 inches. We blew it full of fiberglass insulation, 2x6 wall, all batted out, and then sound transmission board on all the surfaces and then drywall. So, again, the biggest issue is penetrations. You've got to solve those.
How did the drummer's soundproofing work?
He thinks it's fine. His wife doesn't agree. Like you might expect.
Got to find that leak somewhere.
That's right.
651-989-9226. Text same number if you want to talk to Barry. You brought so many good ideas here. We always seem to run out of time.
Well, let me just tell you the thing I'm most excited about, Dave.
Tell me.
This is from last Saturday. We had our final shower at the house. So I've been asked to create some drama in our deck on the exterior of the house. So everybody's seen these like 50-foot light extensions. I think we bought ours at Costco that have these little LED bulbs, and it's like 20, 25 bulbs. So my wife goes and she buys 4 boxes of these. So I've got, 192 feet of lights. I put a little board up across the top, and I've supported it. And I'm stringing lights from my deck, railing, and up to this space, and it looks really cool. But then when I plugged it in, it was so stinking bright. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I didn't really want my neighbors to freak out, but they're LED bulbs.
So they don't take
much. They don't take any juice at all. So then I'm starting to research. I'm looking for dimmers. Can I put a dimmer on this thing? And so I'm looking at stuff and going, oh, here, there's $50 for a dimmer. And like, I don't, you know, interior dimmers, exterior dimmers. And I finally came across one for $12.96 at the big box stores. And both of the major big boxes have them. I didn't, anyway, avoid what we say here. But I found this cool slide dimmer. So now I'm plugging in these LED light strings to my slide dimmer.
Is this one dimmer?
It's one dimmer. Okay. And again, all of these bulb assemblies, these strings are all tied together.
Sure.
So I've got 200 feet, roughly, of lights going through this little dimmer. But because they're LEDs, it's only carrying about 60 watts of juice.
It sips electricity.
And so I'm sliding this dimmer, and I've got complete control of these LED bulbs on this dimmer, and I'm ecstatic. And I had to go get my wife. Honey, look at this. And she's like, oh. And normally when I am excited about something, I love my wife. But when she doesn't always have the same level of enthusiasm, but yeah, she loved this.
She did. Good.
It was like, oh, it's magical. And I'm like, yes, it's magical. And so now we're like, let's have more parties out here. And so it's been marvelous.
What about holiday vacation?
We were only going to have it up for like this one major event.
But
and
not now.
Now my other daughter, who's engaged to be married, and she says, you've got to leave it up for me until October, Dad.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. If I don't have to take it down today after a week, I'll be happy about that. I also found some landscape lights, by the way. $8.
These LEDs too?
LED landscape lights, and you plug those in. They dim too off the same style of dimmer, but I haven't plugged it in a different outlet. And I lit up my little, I don't know, little garden. I get a 40-foot lot in northeast Minneapolis, Denny. Tiny little spot. But my backyard suddenly became an environment I'm happy with.
Great part of town, though. Great part of town. Now, what about, I was thinking when you were talking about the woodwork or looking at these different houses and doing all the stuff you're doing for these weddings, you must have a great collection of tools. How much fun is that?
It is interesting. I told you about this video that I did for the Handyman Club of America, and most of the comments that came in were related to, well, if I had those tools, you know, then I could do that too.
Yeah, right.
And I'm fascinated by tools, obviously. I'm in the business. But I was thinking about, where does a person start? When I first was a kid, I don't know, 20, 21 years old, I'm going to go buy my first big piece of equipment. I went into Sears, and the salesman was like, well, what you need is this radial arm saw, because it'll do everything that a miter saw does and everything that a table saw does. I listened to the salesman. What an idiot I was. I didn't know. In my brain, I've got shop tools, I've got basic tools, and I'm thinking about that because I've got son-in-laws and coming son-in-laws.
Sure, sure.
And I think Christmas shows up, and I want to get them something that will allow them to either fix things or create things in their world. So tools and I'm fond of passing them along. So last Christmas, I gave one of my son-in-laws an air compressor and some trim guns, because I knew he was working on a project where he was replacing all of the old bass in his house with some new bass.
Perfect.
And it was great. But in my mental mind, it's all about what you can afford to spend. And today, I still think that if you're building a shop, you start with a table saw. A table saw is your centerpiece. And if you've got I've got a Powermatic 66. It's a nice table saw. Delta makes a great table saw. But there's a whole bunch of desktop table saws right now that you can find. DeWalt's little small desktop table saw and Bosch's table saw that's portable, those still can function in a small shop. And when you're not trying to do big stuff, big sheets of plywood, they'll work. And we bring those to the job site, and guys who are doing finished carpentry, they'll set these saws up, and they'll rip material on site and turn like a room in the house into this little wood shop. So I think start with a saw. And then the next thing you're going to need is a way to cut things to length. And for me, that's all about getting a chop saw in place. So in my table saw, chop saw. And I have a compound miter. I've gone through a number of them, and there's a bunch of those out there. But Hitachi does a nice job with their little 12-inch compound miter, goes both directions, and you can buy them less expensively now than when I purchased my first one.
That's what I bought my wife a few years ago.
You got her compound miter saw?
Yeah, she's the one that has done, you know,
I don't know that about your wife.
I cut twice and measure once, you know, or more often,
yes,
actually.
I do.
But she's done the woodworking part, and I remember for Christmas, I bought her a router, you know, things like that.
Yes.
Somebody who uses that.
Right.
And I was going to ask you, speaking of tools, is it you get what you pay for usually in tools or not necessarily?
Well, generally, the challenge is there's a brand, a German manufacturer called Festool. I can't afford that line of tools. And there are guys who look at me and say, yes, you can. You should go buy them. And guys who run them are like, I'm never going back.
What's so good about them?
The engineering and the thought process, the intuition behind them, they have dedicated vacuums set up for the trigger connection on a chop saw or a table saw. So you plug the vacuum into this thing, you hit the saw connection, and boom, the vac turns on. So you're always vacuuming without having to think about this. Now, you can do that with your own setup, but these are all integrated for that kind of process. Most tools don't think that far ahead or don't assume that you're going to be actually thinking about how you're going to cut. I've got a separate saw cutting vacuum system in my shop, and I've got a 4-inch and then a reducer to most of my major tools. But I think that if you like woodworking, then start someplace and begin to develop a plan. This year I'm going to work on this one. I got this much budget. This year I'm going to work on this one. But for the do-it-yourself or a top quality cordless drill, and that kit is everything. The battery power goes crazy today. There's all kinds of fun stuff,
but
you can go out and buy a. Well, I was running DeWalt for years, and then I saw my kid brother, and he had this Makita with this little LED light on the drill, and I'm like, I got to get me one of these. and most of the guys on the job sites are running Makita drills. That's what I'm seeing. Probably 8 out of 10 professionals.
That's a lot.
When they run a drill kit, they're running a Makita brand.
Wow.
You know, so that's a preference.
I'll tell you what. Let's take a break here. And, yeah, we've always wanted to talk a little bit about tools. I'm finally
That could be two shows. I mean, for goodness sakes.
All right. If you have any kind of a home improvement question, we'll accept those either by phone or by text. 651-989-9226. There's a line open if you want to fill it, or just send your text. 651-989-9226. It's a Saturday talking home improvement here on News Talk A3OW CCO. Hey, good morning. Welcome back to CCS Home Improvement Show, presented by Lindus Construction, LINDUS, 1-800 Leaf Card. Andy's taking the day off today. Our friend Barry Strands is with us, helping you out. If you have any kind of a home improvement question, this is the guy you want to talk to, or get your text question answered, 651-989-9226. All right, let's see. Let's get back to the text screen, Barry. About where is it here? Okay, I'm going to put vinyl siding on my garage. Right now, there is wood 4x8 panels on it. They are not smooth, have about a 2-inch vertical indent every. Okay, it kind of ends there. every 8. So I assume that's what they're talking about. Vertical indent every 8. It does not complete it. I don't know if you can decipher that.
Well, I'm trying to understand exactly the plane he's referencing. So if you've got a garage and you've got something that's out of plane, can you run vinyl siding over an out-of-plane product? And the question is it a bowed stud? Is the siding itself actually bowed or buckled from moisture? I always like to work with a substrate that's flat and smooth, so I'm going to do whatever it takes to get to that level. If something was a bowed stud and there was an indentation in a piece of siding, then I might fill that with a strip of material and then vinyl over the surface of that. Because vinyl, remember, is hung on the wall with loose nails. It's not stapled tight to any surface. So that means that vinyl is excellent at going over irregularities in the surface. Now, it can handle quarter inch quite nicely. And a lot of guys who want to insulate and then heat a garage, they would put what's called fanfold, a type of insulation product, over the outside wall surface and then install the siding over that. But if you've got large bows or waves in your wall, your vinyl is not going to mask all of that. And personally, I hate that look. You know, wavy vinyl siding looks like an amateur did it, and I just don't think that's, you know, it's not good enough in my world. So I would do what it was required to fur that wall out or to pull siding off and flatten the wall. That's what I would do. But it takes a lot more time. So, you know, but one thing is, if Denny, if you got a section of that wall that's flat, let's say you've got, you know, 80% of your plywood siding or whatever it is in good shape, and some are just in, the sheets are bad, you could take those sheets off and then rip a filler strip that would go over the stud location and then get to the same plane as the other siding pieces, and you don't have to remove it all. So it's not an all or, you know, or none kind of scenario. You're trying to get the base that you're nailing the siding to straight. That's the whole goal.
You know, we've talked a lot in the last few years about, and we did this morning briefly, about where do we find the new talented young people getting into the trades. What about a tradesperson like a bricklayer or a tuck pointer? They're hard to find too, I presume.
Yeah, and the unions are recruiting, and they're going to a lot of the schools today, high schools especially, and to try to encourage trades to people to move into them. And again, I think that we have a culture particularly affluent enough that working with my physical body for a living doesn't appeal to most people today. If you've grown up on video games, you know, life is, it's like you can push a little button, and my kids are big Minecraft fans. So it's like that's easy to excavate and create. But when you have to go sweat for a living, there's a lot of folks who are just kind of walking away from that. I still think it's a great opportunity and excellent business to be in, but it's a different kind of world. What I find fascinating, though, Denny, look at the people whose life has a lot more desk time and let's call it paper time. I don't mean anything negative by that, but that's the world that you live in. Watch what their hobbies are. Almost always it's tactile. Gardening.
Working with their hands.
Woodworking, yeah. Because there's something in the soul of humanity, I think, that needs to be able to exercise creativity in that kind of way, whether it's painting or I've got a daughter who's a marvelous, marvelous painter, or if it's music, maybe it's sculpture. But we have creative outlet need to find a way to express that, and whatever that fashion is, so long as it's legal and doesn't hurt people close to you.
Yeah.
I make fireworks. I like to blow things up. Yes, that is a creative outlet.
And now it's back to the office.
Tell my 9-year-old grandson, yes, but you can't hurt people in the process.
That's interesting. Exploring
your creativity.
Interesting observation. Here, a text just came in. Another one says they have to replace 12-inch lap siding. How do we cut four openings in one replacement siding board, which will have an XL box, AC entrance, and two vents?
Well, that's a fairly straightforward process. There's two different ways to cut holes into a 12-inch lap. One of them is you drill a corner hole at the location of that piece, then take a jigsaw and cut right through the size of the hole that you need. And the other one is to take what most guys call a fine tool. That's a brand, actually, German manufacturer that makes this reciprocating saw. Rockwell makes one, and everybody's making one now. Yeah. You can pick them up. But these little recip saws are designed to vibrate very quickly, and you can cut straight in, plunge cut into those spaces. That's one of the new go-to tools for most guys in the last 7 or 8 years. Everybody's got to have one of those because of what they can create. And they have different tips for them for metal cutting or for wood cutting. You can do tile and you can scrape with them. They're a fascinating tool choice.
Tile, even.
Yeah, I found one. I picked up a third one at Costco last week because it was so cheap. They had one with all the blades for $29.95. And I'm like, hey, for $30, this brand can be terrible. And I can't buy the blades for that at a big box store someplace else. And these are brand specific, but I picked them up. And so far, I'm like, hey, this is a good value. I'm sorry. Costco sometimes has deals on tools that you can't even believe.
Yeah.
Two extension cords for $39.95. And I go to the big box store and the same 50-foot extension cord and this 12-gauge is the same price, only you get one.
Just one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I want to ask you about, because I know the work you do with Kyle Hunt and partners, you see a lot of nice construction. What are homes being, what kind of siding are on some of these nicer homes?
Well, it's a fascination to me because the number one siding being installed nationwide is vinyl by a large margin. According to the Vinyl Institute of America, which is a site that I had to research to teach a class to contractors and realtors and appraisers. But when you start moving up the level of price point and square footage cost to construct, you start moving away from vinyl and you'll be moving into things like fiber cement. Hardy's the biggest brand name there. Or its biggest competitor, SmartSide by LP. Louisiana Pacific makes SmartSide. And by the way, a lot of guys who put both on gravitate to LP. They're like, you know what? After working with both, I'm moving to the SmartSide camp. And my about 70% of contractors who install both prefer it. So, yes.
It's a big percentage.
Yeah, it's a big. Yeah. We've seen enough issues with fiber cement on a variety. It's brittle and installation technique needs to be perfect. And you have to hold it up off of roofing materials at least 2 inches. And so you've got these gaps you don't like and a lot of issues with those. But you then move out of that genre of siding, fiber cement product, and then you start seeing cedar shake.
Mm.
And then when you trump cedar shake, then you get into brick and stones. And stone, I still think, is the coolest look ever. I'm working right now next to a house that has skipping stones that are dry laid and stacked. And it's the most incredible stonework I've seen. And if you're driving down on Lake Minnetonka, this one is just an incredible house. But there's a price point to pay for that. You're paying for a look. And you don't get any more square footage because the outside of your house is awesome. And most people are looking at cost per square foot and saying, hey, how do I maximize my dollar? I need to be able to find a way to keep my prices down. They're not going to put stone siding on the outside walls of their house. That's for people who are into an aesthetic where they want to drive up and go, see, I live here.
Yeah.
And I drive in Northeast Minneapolis, and I have wood siding at my house.
But you see houses with soul.
Yes. It's gorgeous. It's just it comes at a price point.
All right, we've got a minute to go, Barry. Texter says, stained a new cedar deck, did not do a good job. Will a second coat help?
The question is, was it a latex stain or was it oil-based? What you have to understand is if it's latex, it dries so fast that you'll see every overlap mark and you'll end up with a mess that you created. That's why oil stains are only I recommend an oil-based stain in that application. And then you've got to control sunlight so that you're not drying too quickly and keeping a wet edge. There's a lot of technique, and there's good videos online about how to do that. But a second coat on latex will make it gummier, and just basically now you're painting it.
It's true.
I'm still an advocate for stripping it or sanding it back and starting over again.
Still the best way.
Unfortunately.
All right. I tell you what. We need to say goodbye. I hope we see you again quickly down the road.
Huh? I hope so, too. It's gone really fast. Thanks for being you, man.
Thank you. Good luck with the weddings.
Thanks. I'll have more stories to tell next time I see you.
All right. Get some more dimmers.
I'm so excited.
Thanks, Barry. Good to see Barry Strands. And again, if you want to get in touch with the good folks at Lindus Construction, let me spell it again for you, Lindus. And if you want to call them, here's the easiest number to remember. It's 1-800-LEAFGUARD.